The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome in to the Bastards Red Sox post-game edition. Alex Bregman to the rescue. How many hits? Let's see. He was 3 for 4, drove in 3. Was it one home run? Yes, it was. And kind of got the party started. Was basically, I don't know. He was the engine that drove us. Willy Abreu also did damage. 2 home runs, nearly had a third one. The second one was towards the end of the game just for extra insurance before Aroldis Chapman came out. But much needed win. And before we get into it, I just want to say, if you're on Twitter like I am and all of us are, it was an interesting day. And the lesson to be learned here is do not buy game tickets, not just Red Sox, but any sport or any tickets whatsoever. Don't buy any event tickets from anyone you don't know on the app, okay? Because it's probably a scam and you're going to be out some money and it's going to be frustrating. And that's what happened today. Not to me, and I'm not mentioning any names, but I knew the person on the wrong end of it that got scammed, and I actually knew the scammer. And I Googled him, a 5-year prison stint that I wasn't previously aware of. So let that lesson be learned. And So getting back to it. Well, first of all, Chris, how are you?
Better than the people you know, I guess, on both ends, to be honest.
You didn't get scammed.
They either got scammed or they spent 5 years in jail. So I'm all right. And the Sox won. So, I mean, that's good.
And you weren't on last night's show where you got scammed by Lucas Giolito like the rest of us did. So, So let's get into the pitching first. So Tanner Houck, you know, we can file that performance into the I'll take it every time category, but
yep.
I'm not ready to say he's back. I mean, 2 strikeouts, 2 walks, 6 hits. None of them came home, so he was kind of quietly in control, kept the runners on base at bay. What do you make there?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. It's especially in lieu of the way he has pitched this season, it's definitely something you take. I think there's still cause for concern, right? It's like 4-2, right, as far as innings, which just is not enough, that's haunted in his whole career, where he's consistently not been able to give us a lot of innings, even when he's pitching well. To be fair, he also was not getting a lot of good calls from the umpire. That's one. And he also was not the beneficiary of a weird fluky play where the runner, I forgot who it was, didn't touch first, but we didn't challenge it the right way. And the guy ends up being safe, even though he should have been out. So like there was a lot of weird things, that he just was not the beneficiary of, but yeah, I mean, it was a lukewarm performance. Like he kept us in it, right? Especially in lieu of the way we've been hitting. And he was kind of matching the pace of the game. Like they got a 2-0 lead and then we were 2-2 and then it was 3-2 in the blink of an eye. So you take it, but I'm not ecstatic.
That error was at the time. I'm like, yeah, it's frustrating. You know, the Romy got him out. The runner never touched the bag. He should have been out. And I think I said in the war room, I'm like, all right, guys, let's calm down. It's only the third inning. I think we were down by a run at the time and you have to put up runs. So I'm not going to let that run bother me, because if we only score 1 or 2 runs in this game, we have a problem, and we have had a problem. So it would just be a continuation of that. But where it came back to haunt us was that big inning. let's see, that must have been what, the sixth inning, I think. And we plated one run, and then Christian Campbell came home, looked like he slid under the tag and would have been safe. But the challenge from that first base play where the runner didn't touch the bag in the third inning came back to bite us because we didn't have a challenge because that first one didn't go our way. Then I was kind of feeling the sting of that, of the third inning there at first base with Romy and Langford. But man, that was just, I don't know. But we ended up putting up some runs there in the seventh. Willier got us there in the eighth. And the thing I've been thinking about lately, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show. I always forget what I mention on the show and what I say in the war room and get them mixed up. I'm like, what did I say where? But you know, you kind of have some problems if you're not talking about Alex Bregman's opt out. Like, yeah, there's lots of other problems. But man, I mean, he's close. I would say this is pretty close to a JD Martinez 2018 type impact.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's really carried our offense this season. In a lot of big spots, he's definitely been probably the most clutch this season when it comes to runners in scoring position. I think, you know, I'm confident Devers will turn it around, but like, he's had a lot of opportunities this season with runners in scoring position, had some either weak at bats or, you know, flyouts, and just isn't consistently able to get that guy across the plate. And Bregman has, and it's going to give him all the leverage. And, you know, the only thing I'm confident in, or I should say that I feel good about, is the fact that he's swinging the bat so well at Fenway that he starts thinking, like, do I really want to leave here? You know what I mean? Like, he has the leverage, but, like, is he going to really play it? Is he, you know, I could see him finishing out a good career here because, I mean, he kills the monster. So.
Yeah, you know, I've kind of, like, tinkered with it in my head a little bit. Like, what would retaining him look like if he opts out, and why would he not opt out based on the season he's having? I'm just pulling up some numbers right now. So he's seventh in all of Major League Baseball right now in terms of batting average. Interestingly, the guy above him is, at least from a batting average standpoint, hitting way over his head compared to his career, Pete Alonso, who's a guy I kind of coveted, especially late in the offseason as his market kind of started to tank. And then Brendan Donovan with the St. Louis Cardinals, not that familiar with him, but he's fifth. Stephen Kwan, fourth. No surprise there. Paul Goldschmidt is third in terms of average in MLB. He's gotten really hot lately. Not a huge shock there, but he is 37. Jacob Wilson from the Athletics, I guess that's a bit of a surprise. He's hitting 357. And who would you say is leading all of Major League Baseball right now in batting average?
Probably Aaron Judge.
It is Aaron Judge hitting an even 400. I don't know if that game's gone final yet, but they were tied with the Padres 1-1 in the seventh. So hopefully.
It was 3-3 the last time I checked.
Oh, wow. So a lot of late action in that game. Let's just dive in some other numbers on base percentage. Wow. Surprisingly, I thought Bregman would be up there cause he's 401, but there's a bunch of guys above him. I won't go through the whole list, but Kyle Schwarber's up there. Shohei Ohtani, George Springer. That's kind of interesting. Alonso is, but why wouldn't he be if he's got a high average and, you know, drawing some walks? Judge has, what do you think Judge's on base percentage is?
I don't even know. Well,
he's hitting 400.
.650?
No, not that quite. nothing. What would surprise you though? You know, a month in. But
the way you said it, I'm like, it's got to be something just ridiculous.
He's hitting .491, so he's getting on base almost half the time, which is that's crazy. Insane. You know, so.
Well, it's not October yet, so it doesn't shock me.
Right. Yeah, of course not. So, But that just goes to show you how great of a season Bregman is having. I'm just going through the other. Oh, here's a good one. He is leading all of Major League Baseball right now in doubles. So just, and he's not a fast starter. I mean, Nesson talks about that a lot. You know, it takes him a little while to get going. So this type of an impact, like I said, is JD Martinez-like. And if you're wondering why I go to Martinez, how many free agents can you think of off the top of your head just caught fire right away? I mean, it doesn't happen often, like big free agents.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often, and specifically in recent memory for the Sox, right? Because I think we had JD Martinez who hit right from the get-go, and the next big signing, I hate to say it, I think was Trevor Story, and he still hasn't hit. Like, you don't have a coronary, Terry. But yeah, no, I mean, Bregman, although it would be the Sox luck, right? Like, his whole career, he's always started off slow. He comes here, he's on fire. He's going to have like a miserable second half, our luck.
Well, with Trevor Story, you look at the black holes in the lineup in terms of position. Right now, it's shortstop and it's first base. And Romy's given you something in the last handful of games, so I shouldn't take away from him. But those are the two positions you're concerned about long term. Your whole outfield, you know, Duran does pretty well. The Abreu, Ref Snyder platoon is amazing. I'd say Rafaela does just enough. Basically, he's not a black hole. He'll give you a competitive at bat. And then as far as your infield goes, I mean, Campbell's been, I would say, exceeding expectations. Devers is streaky, but okay. And catcher Wong has had a couple of hits since he comes back. So
yeah,
I don't know. I just feel like you got to resolve shortstop and you got to resolve first base. And jokingly, Romy had that collision with he was the base runner in this case, though. And he banged his quad off the other guy's hip and they both hit the ground. Romy was down for a while. And I said, I'm going to get my wish, aren't I? Devers is going to first. And then Delfino starts, you know, playing patty cakes with me a little bit in the war room. And I was like, you know what? Since they all keep getting hurt, let's just put Story there and just let that. Let that take care of itself.
You put Story there, he'll lose a leg. yeah, it was wild. And it's weird because I was watching the game on TV, but looking down at my phone to watch the Celtics. I'm going to get into that.
They got blown out, right? Is that what I said?
No, they've now blown two 20-point leads to the Knicks and lost in miserable fashion. So
is it 2-0? I'm not a basketball guy.
Yeah, it's 2-0 Knicks. And the Celtics, I mean, when they're both playing at their top, are a far better team. But this isn't a Celtics podcast. But nonetheless, I was looking down at the score, and then I saw the War Room chat pop up, and you guys were talking about the Romy. So I look back up, and I'm like, oh, my God, what happened now? And I see him laying there. So, of course, I start thinking about Tristan Casas. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And I start playing in my head, what are we going to do? Because, I mean, Cora's adamant it's not going to be Devers. There could be no one on the team that wouldn't be Devers. And I started thinking the same thing. I'm like, oh, they're going to put Story there. But we're at a point now where, I mean, we're shooting ourselves so badly in the feet with like the lineup that we keep strutting out there with the prospects that we have and the team and the players that we keep just putting out here. Yeah, Romy's been serviceable, but like, can I see him being the answer at first base for the rest of the season if we're going to really compete? Hell no. There's absolutely no way. And to your point, like, Story is a black hole in this lineup at this point. And I don't know what the resolve is there, not named Mayer, right? Like, I don't know what the answer is. And Rafael, it's funny, Rafael, I think, gets a lot of flack because of the rest of the offense isn't hitting. Because if the offense was hitting, no one would care that he was basically Jackie Bradley Jr. 2.0, batting where he is in the lineup. And playing the type of defense he does. But he strikes out a lot. He swings for the fences and misses. And it gets magnified when no one's hitting the ball, right? Where it's very streaky the way we've been for an offense. So there's a long-winded answer for you, Terry. But I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, I think you get Meyer up as quickly as you can. You know, there's risk with that because if he goes into a slump, we've been very lucky with Campbell, who hasn't really had a painful slump at all so far. So yeah, if you could get Meyer up, I don't know. Like Jason Kelly said on the last episode last night, I mean, it's too early to make a trade. Nobody's really wanting to give up yet. And even if somebody does want to trade someone, you kind of want the market to materialize. That way you're getting decent value. So, you know, you're kind of stuck with what you have, but this team is dynamic enough. You've got power. You've got the ability to put the ball in play. You've got speed on the bases. This team checks off a lot of boxes, and yeah. We need to start playing better. And who do we have next? We have either Atlanta or Detroit, one or the other. It's in the same road trip, but it's going to be a tough one. And hopefully this is a team that kind of rises to the level of our opponents and steps up, because we fell flat against the bad teams.
Yeah, so we actually have Kansas City in between Detroit.
Oh, my bad.
No, to be honest, I totally forgot. I was thinking it was Detroit as well.
So that's on the road. That's right. And then Atlanta is after that because they're at home. And I know that because I'm going to the second series at the end of the month. I'll be at two games in Atlanta at Truist Park. So looking forward to that. I'm actually going with a regular listener of the show. So,
oh, nice.
That's going to be fun. And I have a friend that lives nearby that we're going to stay with, so we won't have hotel expenses, but
it's a beautiful stadium. So
you've been there?
So the old company I used to work for, I won't say who, actually has a box there, and tons of advertisement in the right field or left field. I forgot. But so I flew down there for a market meeting, and I got to watch a Braves Marlins game. That was a football score. I think the Braves won like 19-3. It was wild.
Well, I mean, you would think the Marlins would be a football team, you know, based on their scores pretty often. That's got to be one of the worst franchises. Like, if I'm making a bottom five, they're in it. The Angels are in it. The Reds are probably in it.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's got to be a couple other teams. But
Rockies.
Oh, yeah. How can I forget them? They might be number one or two, actually, depending on who it is. I mean, they've gone to a World Series, and we stopped them from winning it. The Marlins have actually won two, one of them with John Henry, go figure. Yeah. But yeah. So let's just pivot to a topic we had last night. There was a lot of discussion yesterday about Devers going to first, and Alex Cora just completely shut it down before the game started when he met with media. And then after that, you had all of Nesson, Lou Maloney, Dave O'Brien, you had Rob Bradford. And I want to say one more person, all strongly advocating for Devers to go to first. And then Cora today kind of walks it back a little bit and says, well, we might have a conversation at some point. So I don't know how to read into that, but why not? Why not Devers at first base?
I mean, well, besides the fact that every first baseman we have gets hurt, and we certainly can't afford to lose Devers, I can't see a reason that you don't give it a shot at this point. Like we said, Romy's not the answer. But then my question to you, Terry, is if we put him at first, what's the long-term answer in your mind for DH? I'm interested to hear that.
So one of the things I think you could do is, if Devers goes to first, and this might not be a popular thing, I've mentioned it recently, you could bring back Yoshida and platoon him with Ref Snyder, and you just have a platoon DH. I think the Texas Rangers, if I'm not mistaken, did that the year they won the World Series. So it can work. And, you know, in a pinch, if you need Ref Snyder in the outfield, that could happen. But if you do it, it kind of clears the way for Roman Anthony to have an everyday spot. And I don't know if perhaps Rafaela slots into a super utility role. I mean, he's kind of shown flashes lately, but I'm not sold that it's in our best interest to have him out there, because Durant is a plus defender. Anthony, I think, is at least an above average defender. Yeah. And so is Abreu. So you're not really hurting without Rafael. He probably is your best defensive outfielder, but I mean, if you want to have a robust offense, I don't know. It's tough. It's still, we don't know how the pieces fit.
Well, did you see that? There was a clip of Yoshida the other day. It looked like he was like wincing. I forgot if he was swinging the bat or throwing a ball. I kept thinking was, oh, maybe he is actually legit hurt. But I like that idea. I like the platooning between Yoshida and Ref Snyder. I think, depending on the matchup, it gives us, first of all, a hitter that's going to make contact consistently on the ball. And both can bat for average. Both are very streaky, but when they're hitting, they can bat for average and keep the lineup moving. So I'm not opposed to that at all. And I think, the sooner we can get our eyes on Roman Anthony, the better at this point. I think a lot's going to have to do with how we're playing, where we are. It's a very interesting year. I mentioned it in the war room, and this goes back to the point that you made about the whole trade market. Nothing really, materializing at this point, which makes sense. Everyone's in it. The American League hasn't been this bad in over 20 years. And that's probably the most frustrating thing, is because it hasn't been this bad in over 20 years. And we had so much hope, and we're sitting here on May 7th talking about a 500 Red Sox team at 19-19, which I believe is worse than last year's team.
I believe it is. Jim was talking about that. Bummer. The Yankees ended up winning. So let's pull up the standings. I think that puts them five games above 500. No, well, four, my bad.
Story of our life is when they lose, we lose. And then when we win, they win. So.
Yeah, and then you look at the rest of the division, the Blue Jays 3 games under 500, Tampa Bay 4 games, the Orioles are 9 games below 500. So there, I didn't get a chance to listen to it, but their GM was on a podcast today expressing optimism that their pitching will bounce back and their season's not over yet. So we'll see. And what about the Red Sox? I mean, we talked about this a little bit last night. I mean, are they a playoff team? If you had to place a bet today on May 7th, are they a playoff team?
Okay, you're asking the guy that 2 weeks ago said we were the third best team in the league. So I don't know. I don't know if my opinion holds any weight at this point. I'll take the L. I would probably bet no. And not because I don't think we're capable, not that I don't think we're going to be in it. I'm just so broken from the last 5 years that it's hard to imagine that things are going to go right. Why would it?
Yeah. The thing in the back of my mind is, you look at the Tigers last year, came out of nowhere, got hot. I think they got sick of being the Tigers and, went on that amazing run. And it just seems like every team at some point in the season is just going to catch fire. But you look at the league right now, the Yankees have, so the Red Sox have 19 wins. So the Yankees have 20, the Tigers, Guardians, and Royals all have 22 apiece. So it's in the win column, it's essentially a three-way tie in the Central. And then the Athletics, who I picked to win the division, by the way, are 2 games above 500, in second place in the AOS at 20-18. And the Mariners have 22 wins as well. So just a quick count there. 5-6 teams above us. So I guess we would be in possession of that.
Let's even simplify it, Terry. I'm gonna pose it to you this way. You tell me your thoughts. At the end of the year, do you think we're going to have a better record than the Cleveland Guardians?
We should. I mean, on paper, we should.
Right.
I'm going to say yes. I'm okay. Still going to be the optimist and say yes. Am I supremely optimistic? No, I'm not. But if you can go on a run here, if we can win, let's say 8 out of 10, and even in our bad seasons, we've done that at some point in the first half. If we can just do that, find our identity, I think you can kind of go on that run. But right now, this team doesn't know who they are. And, you know, it's essentially been Bregman and Devers and Abreu at times carrying this team. Everybody else has to step up. And that's the frustrating thing, I guess. You've got Rafaela, Trevor Story even, you know, with Meyer waiting in the wings. And I'm looking for at least one more in there. But at least those two players, they've got guys that can replace them. And they're not, Story and Rafaela, they're not stepping up and they're not crushing it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I hate to put too much importance on a series in the middle of May or two series with that, but I think we're going to learn a lot in the next six games. We've got three against the Royals ahead of us in the wild card. Detroit, who's either going to be the first wild card or win their division, they're going to flip with Cleveland, one of the two. And we're behind all of them. We're 1.5 out of the third wild card in the worst American League that's ever existed. And 2.5 out, I think, from that first one, which is held by Cleveland. So I think a lot's going to happen in these next six games. And let's face it, our record has not been good against teams above 500, in which in both cases they are. So we're going to learn a lot. That sucks in the next six games.
The other thing you have to consider, too, is the Yankees pitching is, like, decimated right now. So, you know, they could seriously run into problems. The team I kind of worry about, believe it or not, is Tampa. Just because they could get hot for no particular reason and win 92 games with a hot second half.
Yeah, I would agree. Out of the teams behind us, I'm worried about probably – I mean, you never know with Toronto because they could just go on a hitting streak with that lineup. But to your point, pitching long-term, I'm more worried about Tampa. But the thing is like with the Yankees, I keep waiting for their pitching to be what holds them back. But it hasn't thus far. Can it long-term? Of course. But there's been nothing to show me that like we're going to do anything that's going to like surpass them, because as bad as their pitching is, they're still able. I think they're what, four ahead of us in the loss column, three.
Yeah.
Which I know we could overcome, but again, there's been nothing to show me thus far on a consistent basis that gets me excited to this point.
Yeah. And just looking ahead in the near term, we do have Kansas City, like you said, at Kansas City. So more of a pitcher's park. And the three pitchers we're trotting out there, according to ESPN, Dobbins, Crochet, and Giolito. So two of those games are iffy. I think Dobbins can kind of keep us in it.
Yeah.
If we're putting up a few runs, and Giolito is just a complete wild card. And I would imagine, you know, it was a little cool last night, you know, temps around 50, 55 or so, steady rain for much of the first few innings. Couldn't have been easy to grip the ball, but then Newcomb comes in and pitches good. So I don't know. I don't know that I want Giolito in a big game. It feels like every game right now is big.
Yeah, no, every game is big at this point, especially with the place that we put ourselves in. And we thought that there was going to be strengths to this rotation, just the pitching in general this year. Did we have like great top line depth in the rotation? No, but we thought that we had some good middle, like twos and threes all stacked up, and it just hasn't panned out that way. And you know, the thing is, it's like with Crochet, like every game you could say like, yeah, he's gonna win this game, but we all realistically know that he's gonna have bad games, or he's gonna have the games where he pitches well and we're just not hitting, and he's gonna take an L for it. That's not fair. And it's a lot to ride on just one guy, and it feels very much like we're always like, all right, Crochet, like we're at least going to be in that game. We can't even say we're going to win it. And to your point, like Dobbins, at him and Giolito, I have more faith that he'll keep us in it. And Giolito, like it's been Jekyll and Hyde with him. So, and he's coming off of a pretty major injury that kept him out for, you know, a significant amount of time. He hasn't played baseball. So it's iffy at best.
It absolutely is. So tomorrow we have Brian Bayo going up against, I think that's Jack Leiter. I get my Leiters mixed up. Yeah, Jack Leiter of the Tigers. Rangers.
Rangers, yeah.
Yeah, and so he is coming off of a pretty bad start. Only lasted 4 1/3 innings against the Seattle Mariners and gave up 8 hits, 6 earned runs. 2 of those were homers, and he only struck out 2. So perhaps we're catching him, you know, at the right time. Bayo has been surprising. And
yeah, no, he's been better than I thought.
2.55 ERA has basically given us a chance to win every time out. In fact, we have won every time out with Bayo. So gave up just 1 earned against Minnesota, you know, struggling team, mostly from a pitching standpoint, though. Gave up 3 against Cleveland and then just 1 against Seattle. The strikeouts have ticked up by 1 each time. So hopefully, you know, he finds a stride. This is probably going to be his, and in fact, will be his toughest lineup so far.
Oh, no. I just realized something, though.
The day game thing?
It's a day game.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, just trying to bruise right past that one.
But if he's off to a good start, maybe that thing can get nipped as well. But
has he pitched any? I mean, I would imagine he's had to by now, but I don't remember any day games that he's pitched. Every game that I think I've watched him pitch actually coincidentally was a night game. So, like, well, listen, let's hope he beats the Sun tomorrow.
We'll just have to hope for the best, but he's going to be, you know, facing Corey Seager, Adolis Garcia, Josh Young, Marcus Semien. It's a pretty robust lineup. So, If the curse doesn't rear its ugly head and he can keep this lineup to 2 or 3 runs, extremely encouraging going forward.
Yeah, I agree. If we could get tomorrow and just get ourselves over 500 and then take 6 games on the road against 2 formidable teams that we're going to have to either compete with or chase down in a wild card race more than likely, if we could take 4 out of 6 from them, I'd feel better about the season. I'm not going to feel great, but I'd feel a hell of a lot better than I do right now.
Couldn't agree more, but you win tomorrow, you win the series. We've dropped the last 2, so hopefully it happens. We will be back tomorrow night. I think it's me, Jason Kelly, and Jim Delfino. So we'll be with you. I shouldn't say right after the game wraps because it is an afternoon game, but at some point in the evening we'll be on to discuss it. So everyone have a great Thursday, and we'll be back with you soon. Take care.